Okay, got all the glitches out. Good to see everybody. So welcome to the Bhagavad Gita class. We're on chapter 9 and we're finishing up the purport for verse 2 in chapter 9. So first we're going to chant Jai Radha Madhava. All right, good to see everybody here. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabihati Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabihati Gopijana Balabha Girivadahuti Gopi Jana Malabha Girivadahuti Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunyabihati Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunyabihati Gopi Jana Balabha Giribharadhadi Gopi Jana Malabha Giribharadhadi Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Randhu Madhava Kunyabihati Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabihari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paramahacharya Osta Teta Sittashi Shimad His Divine Grace Abhaya Chandanada Bhaktivananda Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Iskan Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrindi Ki Jai Namacharya Shrahira Stakur Vijaya Rem Se Koho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Parabhu Nityananda Shivaita Garadha Shivasiti Gaur Bhakta Vrindi Gijaya Chi Shri Radhakrishna Gopi Gopatana Nath Shyamakun Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Gijaya Vrindavanam Gijaya Vachuradam Gijaya Tegarada Sami Gijaya Yamanamai Gijaya Shimari Lasi Devi Gajai, Samaveda Bhakta, Vrindi Gajai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bo. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasaya Vudhlai. Shimari Bhakta Vrindi Swami. Namaste. We offer our respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of our spiritual masters, Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who so kindly opened our eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while we were blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So, Om Gana Timiranda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Meditam Yena Tasmai Shikurve Namaha. So, we are continuing with our study of Bhagavad Gita in the 9th chapter. We're ending the discussion on the second verse's purport. So, we will continue. It is said here that devotional service is eternally existing. It is not as the Mayavadi philosophers claim. Although they sometimes take the so-called devotional service, their idea is that as long as they are not liberated, they will continue their devotional service. But at the end, when they become liberated, they will become one with God. Or become God, or become nothing, or whatever. But they don't believe that God has, Krishna, as a individual, eternal personality and form. So this is the problem. Such temporary, time-serving devotional service is not accepted as pure devotional service. Actual devotional service continues even after liberation. When the devotee goes to the spiritual planet in the kingdom of God, he is also engaged there in serving the Supreme Lord. He does not try to become one with the Supreme Lord. So, as we mentioned before, service is of four different types. Passive adoration, active service, friendship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, parental affection for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and ultimately the conjugal relationship. As will be seen in Bhagavad Gita, actual devotional service begins after liberation. After one is liberated, when one is situated in the Brahman position, Brahma-bhuta, this is the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4:30:20, one's devotional service begins, actually. It's actually a verse from that Bhagavad Gita. Brahma-bhuta prasanam sochitana kanchati samak sarveshu bhuteshu bhagavatim abhate param. That one, Brahma-bhuta prasanam, when one is actually on the Brahman platform, he is happy, prasanatma. The sokshati na kongshati. He doesn't hanker for anything. And he doesn't lament for those things he lost. Sama, sarveshu bhuteshu. He sees all living entities equally. It doesn't matter what their race or religion or their color of their skin was, race, of course, or any of those external factors, or men or women. Sees it all equally. And then, man bhaktim labhate param. In this such a state, one can actually take up devotional service. So in other words, that is a prerequisite for devotional service. Prerequisite means you got to do it before you actually engage in devotional service. You have to see that all living entities are equal. If you're discriminating based on the body, if you're a sexist or a racist or a specious, you're not ready. So devotional service is the best path to equality for all living entities. No one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead by executing karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga. We discussed that before. Karma yoga means to do activities for Krishna, but not out of love, not necessarily out of love. Jnana Yoga means to try to understand the Absolute Truth using your brain or get liberated. Ashtanga Yoga is the Hatha Yoga process, or any other yoga independently. By these yoga methods, one may make a little progress towards Bhakti Yoga. But without coming to the stage of devotional service, one cannot understand what is the personality of Godhead. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is also confirmed that when one becomes purified by executing the process of devotional service, especially by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from realized souls, then he can understand the science of Krishna or the science of God. What is that verse? Well, there's one verse, Prasanga. There's another verse I want to think of right now. Stam Prasanga, Mama Virya, something of that verse. One of them. Another verse is, anyway, we'll think of it later. Evam prasanna manaso, there is the verse, sorry. Manaso bhagavat bhakti yogata. Sorry. When one's heart is cleared of all nonsense, then one can understand what God is. Thus, the process of devotional service of Krishna consciousness is the king of all education and the king of all confidential knowledge, is the purest form of religion, and it can be executed joyfully without difficulty. Therefore, one should adopt it. So one has to be, as Prabhupada said here, when one's heart is cleared of all nonsense. How do you clear your heart of all nonsense? Well, first of all, chant the Lord's holy names. Cheto Dharpana Marjanam. Baba Mahadvagni Nivapanam. That by the chanting, it's cleansing the heart. That's the first thing. But another important point is don't keep throwing dirt in. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asked one time, what is the quality of a devotee? Or just describe what the first quality, or let's say manifestation of qualities of the devotees are. He said, a satsangachag e vaishnavachar. The first point is avoid bad association. That's the first point. Why is it so dangerous in the progress of Krishna consciousness? Because bad association carries with it the lower modes of nature. If you associate with people who are drinking, if you associate with people taking drugs, if you associate with people eating meat, then after a while your consciousness will change, will become polluted. As we mentioned many times before, even if you eat food cooked by people who are in the modes of nature, low modes of nature, your mind will become wicked. And the typical example I always give in that regard is Grandfather Bhishma, Dronacharya, Kripacharya, who are all great devotees, yet they were eating in Duryodhana's kitchen. Not in the kitchen per se, but food that came from this Duryodhana's kitchen. And so it's described that their minds became wicked, they lost their sense of judgment, and they engaged in nefarious activities opposing those who were on Krishna's side. So one has to be very careful what you put into the body, who you hang out with, what sort of music you listen. I was just talking to someone today about football, which I don't know anything about. But I've observed people watching football games. And generally, they start to look like gorillas. The people who are watching, I'm not talking about the football players. People watching them. It's the lower modes of nature. I mean, fortunately, I was never attracted to that sort of thing. I remember when I was in high school, I was a member of the marching band. Marching band means, well, anyway, that you march and do different performances at what's called the halftime during the football games. So you have different performances, means you actually make different chakras, or not chakras, different diagrams on the field with the band, and you march around swinging. I was playing the trombone from side to side, like that. And it was the most boring time of my entire life, attending a football game. All I did was watch the clock and pray to God that it would be over soon. That's how bad it was for me. Or everybody else was going Hari Bol or Jai or whatever stupid thing they were saying. So anyway, so different people in different modes are attracted to different things. I wasn't attracted to those things. You know, the mode of goodness, you're definitely not attracted to that. You know, if I wanted to see that, I would just go to the zoo and see people, or see living entities, sorry, in their natural habitat. So, hope I have not offended anybody. Text 3. Ashradarana purusha dharma shasha param prantapa. Let me get rid of this thing up here. Apraprayamam nivartante mrityu samsara vartmane. Wow, this is an important verse. Ashradarana, those who are faithless. So remember I said shraddha means faith. Actually, technically what it means is shraddha, to give your heart. not simply to believe in something, but to give your heart. So ashraddha means not to give your heart, or as Prabhupada translates it here, it's faithless. Those who are faithless, purushaha, such person, dharma shasha, toward the process of religion, asha this, parantapa, O killer of the enemies, that's Arjuna, of course, aprapya, will, without obtaining. So there you have the A again in front of there. Prapya means to obtain. Aprapya means not to obtain. I'm learning a little Sanskrit here. Mam, me. It's pretty easy. Nivartante, come back. Mrityu means of death. Samsara, immaterial existence. It actually means the chain or the wheel of material existence, and that's further elaborated by Bhartmani on the path of the wheel of material existence. Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in this material world. So you've got to have faith. Believe in the Lord. And, as we mentioned before, faith means the trust, giving one's heart, and it is evidenced by action, not simply by words. Words means, and you act, let's say if you have some words and you act contradictory to those words, you are a hypocrite. Don't do as I do, do as I say. That's hypocrisy. So we see that amongst many, many religionists, spiritualists, they are hypocrites. Some really big philosophy or not so big philosophy or fancy philosophy, and they don't follow it. Behind the scenes, behind closed doors, who knows what evil lurks in the heart of men? The shadow knows. Sorry about that. So, purport. The faithless cannot accomplish this process of devotional service. That is the purport of this verse. Faith is created. Here, Prabhupada says, how you get faith? By the association with devotees. Unfortunate people, after hearing all the evidence of Vedic literature from great personalities, still have no faith in God. They are hesitant and cannot stay fixed in devotional service of the Lord. Thus, faith is a most important factor for progress in Krishna consciousness. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says that faith is the complete conviction that simply by serving the Supreme Lord Krishna, one can achieve all perfection. That's the verse I've quoted often. Shraddha Shabde Visha Shakahe Su Dhrita Nishtya. Faith means the complete conviction, exactly what Prabhupada said, simply doing what Krishna wants, everything is accomplished. That's another paraphrase translation. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Yathatara mula nisechanena tripyanti tatskanda bujopasakaha apranopaharatcha yatendriyanam tatayavasarvarhanamachyuteja. Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 31st verse, text 14. I give water to the root of the tree. One satisfies its branches, twigs, and leaves, and by supplying water to the stomach, one satisfies all the senses of the body. Similarly, in the same way, by engaging in the transcendental service of the Supreme Lord, one automatically satisfies all the demigods and all other living entities. Therefore, after reading Srimad Bhagavatam, one should promptly come to the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. One should give up all other engagements and adopt the service of the Supreme Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead. If one is convinced of this philosophy of life, that is faith. So I have that faith. So, I was just going to quote from the Goswami Ashtaka by Srinivas Acharya. Dhira dhira jinapriyo priyakaro nirmatsaro puchito. It's described that one who is Krishna conscious, he is dear to all the devotees and the ruffians. And that's an English word, ruffian. Why? Because niramatsara bhujito. because he is not envious, and that person is worshipable. Just like Srila Prabhupada was like that. Prabhupada, everyone loved Prabhupada, even if they didn't become devotees of the Lord, because he had no envy. No lust, no envy, no greed, kama, krodha, mada, matsarya, no fear, bhavya, no illusion. Now the development, and that was Prabhupada, fearless, abhaya charanada, bhakti vedanta swami, Srila Prabhupada. Now the development of that faith is the process of Krishna consciousness. There are three divisions of Krishna conscious men. Now here, Prabhupada is talking about three grades of people who are Krishna conscious. And the third class are those who have no faith. Even if they are officially engaged in devotional service, they cannot achieve the highest perfectional stage. Most probably they will slip after some time. They may become engaged, but because they haven't complete conviction and faith, it is very difficult for them to continue in Krishna consciousness because they'll be tested at some particular point, obviously. And they don't understand the Krishna consciousness, the goal. They take it up as a sentiment. Some people take it up as a sentiment, just like people follow different religions because they were taught that religion by their parents or their friends are doing it, and they don't really understand why they're doing what they're doing. That's why I stress the why factor. We should always think, while we're doing something, why we're doing it, not simply put ourselves on automatic pilot. We have practical experience in discharging our missionary activity. Some people come and apply themselves to Krishna consciousness with some hidden motive. And as soon as they are economically a little well situated, they give up this process and take their old ways again. It is only by faith that one can advance in Krishna consciousness. And which Prabhupada is referring to in India, people come, many people come because they're looking for wealth. And they see Krishna consciousness, and, you know, there's a lot of wealth in Krishna consciousness. Actually, in my life, I had to give up my wealth to join the Krishna consciousness movement. Really opposite. Phew. As far as the development of faith is concerned, one who is well-versed in the literatures of devotional service and has attained the stage of firm faith is called a first-class person in Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada here is jumping to what's called the first class. First class is one who has faith and knows everything in the Vedic literature, at least the conclusion of the Vedic literatures. And now Prabhupada is going to jump down to second class. And in the second class are those who are not very advanced in understanding the devotional scriptures, but who automatically have firm faith that Krishna Bhakti, your service to Krishna, is the best course, and so in good faith have taken it up. They are superior to the third class, who have neither perfect knowledge of the scriptures nor good faith, but by association and simplicity they are trying to follow. The third class person in Krishna consciousness may fall down, but when one is in the second class, he does not fall down, and for the first class person in Krishna consciousness, there's no chance of falling down. One in the first class will surely make progress and achieve the result at the end. As far as the third class person in Krishna consciousness is concerned, although he has faith in the conviction that devotional service to Krishna is very good, he has not yet gained adequate knowledge of Krishna through the scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes these third class persons in Krishna consciousness have some tendency towards karma yoga and jnana yoga, and sometimes they are disturbed. But as soon as the infection of karma yoga and jnana yoga is vanquished, they become second class or first class persons in Krishna consciousness. Faith in Krishna is also divided into three stages and described in Srimad Bhagavatam. First class attachment, second class attachment, and third class attachment are also explained in Srimad Bhagavatam in the 11th canto. Those who have no faith, even after hearing about Krishna and the excellence of devotional service, who think it is simply eulogy, find the path very difficult, even if they are supposedly engaged in devotional service. For them, there is very little hope of gaining perfection. Thus, faith is very important in the discharge of devotional service. Let me explain the nomenclature of faith. So the third class person is called a Kanishta Adhikari. Now, Adhikari means one has the right, but materialistic person. Basically, a materialistic person who comes to Krishna consciousness is third class. They don't really have firm faith. They certainly don't have knowledge of the scriptures. They may come out of sentiment. They may come out of family tradition. They may come for the four reasons we mentioned. They're looking for wealth. They're inquisitive. They're distressed. Or they're looking for knowledge. That's third class. Now, second class is called Majjhima, which means middle. Majjhima, in reference to the body, also means the waist, which is in the middle. So if someone has a thin waist, they're called Sumajjhima. It's good waist. I guess a big waist would be called Mahamajjhima. Anyway, apart from that joke, so that second class, they have firm faith in Krishna, but they just don't know how to, let's say, defend Krishna consciousness if they're approached with some shastric arguments like that. They just don't know it. And so they're called Majjhima Adhikaris. And so the topmost, the first class faith, is called Uttama Adhikari, which means topmost. Anyway, Uttama. Above all everything else, Uttama. So they're Uttama Adhikaris, and they have such firm faith, they're knowledgeable in the scriptures. And in addition, another context, it describes that they see from a really transcendental platform that everyone's serving Krishna. And if someone is completely immersed in the Uttama concept, they're just absorbed in their internal relationship with Krishna and they're not preaching. So you may ask, so who preaches? The person who is most effective at preaching is someone who is on the Uttama platform, the topmost platform, firm faith, absorbed in his eternal relationship with Krishna, but voluntarily acts like he's on the second class platform. Because in the second class platform, there's other symptoms too. One has to distinguish between who is a devotee, who is innocent, who is envious, and the Supreme Lord. There's four different things you distinguish amongst. The Lord, the innocent, the envious, and devotees. Okay. You actually have to distinguish. And devotees you make friendship with, try to help the innocent, and the envious, you just run away with your two little legs. You don't try to waste time with them. As the Serenity Prayer says, you know, understand the things you can change and the things you can't change. And don't bother to try to change the things you can't change because you're not going to be able to change the things you can't change. The things you can change, you will be able to change. Have that discrimination. That's a second-class devotee. And so a second-class devotee sees, another point is, sees Krishna in everyone's heart. Right? And he understands all this energy we see here is Krishna's energy. Everything belongs to Krishna. Ishavashamidam saram yatkanjajakacham jakat. That's second class devotee. Third class devotee, we're just skipping, just to give a brief analysis of the different classes of devotees. Third class devotee sees God in the church, in the temple, but outside of there, God ain't there. You know, you see the deities, oh, Krishna, Govinda. Then you walk out of the temple room and you just like start smacking people around and that, being nice to the devotees. That's a third class devotee. You know, someone who's very devoted in the temple and outside, the person's a complete nonsense. And so you see that a lot of times. And people are very respectful, but in their own home, it's a mess. They're mistreating their family members, mistreating the devotees. That is a third-class devotee. Only God is in the temple. Second-class devotee sees God everywhere. And first-class devotee sees everyone as a devotee of God, even if they're not acting like that, because he understands everybody's being controlled and serving God, either directly or indirectly under the jurisdiction of Krishna's external potency or internal potency. So that's first class devotee. So this is the distinction. There's many other descriptions that are there. A first class devotee, of course, can save the whole world like Srila Prabhupada. Second class devotee is a preacher. Third class devotee, just a materialistic devotee. So we should at least be second class devotees or act on the platform of second class devotees. And then we distinguish. In other words, we don't try to preach to people who are envious. We try to study the shastras. We try to see how Krishna is present in everything, everywhere, not just in the temple. Krishna is in everyone's heart. So that's a second class devotee. that should be what we aspire for right now. Okay, and next verse. Another famous verse. Mayatatamidam sarvam jagadavyaktamurtinam atstani sarvabhutani nachaham teshvavastitaha. Maya, by me. Tatam, pervaded, idam, this, sarvam, all, jagat, cosmic manifestation of yaktamurtina, by the unmanifest form, matstani, unmanifested form, matstani, in me, sarvabhutani, all living entities, na, not, cha, also, ham, I, te, shu, in them, avastataha, situated. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I'm not in them. Woo! That is a heavy statement. Unmanifested form means Krishna in his energy. The entire universe is Krishna's energy. So, in one sense it's Krishna, in another sense it's not Krishna. We talked about this, Achincha, Beta, Beta, Tattva philosophy. All beings are in Krishna's energies. But in one sense, Krishna is not in them, Krishna is in their hearts. But Krishna's not in the soul. Anyway. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is not perceivable through the gross material senses. That means you can't see Krishna with these eyes, and you can't hear Krishna with the ears, you can't smell Krishna with the nose, you can't touch Krishna with the fingers, etc. And you can't taste Krishna with the tongue. Of course, prasadam is kind of nice. So, but you can perceive him with the spiritual senses, which are right now covered by the material senses. And so here you hear this, have this nice statement from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Atakshi Krishna Namadi Nabhavet Grahyam Indriyai Sevan Mukhehi Jivado Swayam Eva Sparachyadaha. That's from the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the Majalila, 17th chapter, 136th verse. It's also in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 1-234. Lord Krishna's name, fame, pastimes, etc. cannot be understood by material senses. Only one who's engaged in pure devotional service under proper guidance is he revealed. Only to one. So in other words, let's go over that verse again. The name of Krishna and Krishna himself cannot be appreciated by the senses, but by serving Krishna, beginning with the tongue. Seva mukhehi jivado. So that's interesting. Jiva means tongue, auto in the beginning. So beginning with the tongue. So by serving Krishna, beginning with the tongue. How do we serve Krishna beginning with the tongue? We chant the holy names. We eat prasadam. Then by that process, swayam, eva sparachana, he can be revealed to you. So it's interesting that Prabhupada here in this purport and in this translation did not actually mention the tongue, although it's there in the verse. In the Brahma Sangita, 5th chapter, text 38, it is stated, Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena santak sadaiva vidyeshu vilokiyanti. And the verse is, Yam Shaima Shandara Chinchiguna Swarupam Govinda Madhi Purasham Tamaham Bhajami. One can see the personality of God in Govinda always within himself and outside himself, but one has developed a transcendental loving attitude towards him. Now, direct translation is, if one's eyes are tinged with a salve, salve is like some sort of salve. I'm sure you understand what that is. That's some potion of love of God. In such a person, such a saintly person, can always see Krishna within a heart of hearts. He can see Krishna everywhere. If his eyes are tinged with the salve of love of God. Thus, for people in general, he's not visible. Because they don't want to see him. And Krishna doesn't want them to see him. You know, someone... I mean, I have that experience, like people really don't like me. If I see them coming down the street, I'll turn the other direction. I don't want to see them either. It's not that I'm inimical to them. It's just that, you know, I just feel really uncomfortable being in front of them. I mean, sure, we have all had that experience that some people just don't like us for God knows what reason, even if there is no reason, they just don't like us. And thus, you know, we feel very uncomfortable being in front of those people. And so Krishna doesn't have to feel uncomfortable, he just doesn't make himself visible. Here it is said that although he is all-pervading, everywhere present, he is not conceivable by the material senses. This is indicated by the word of yukta murtina. That means unmanifest form. Murtina means form of yukta. Again, you have that A in front of the word. Vyakta means to manifest, and avyakta means unmanifest. In other words, Krishna's not manifest, it's invisible. It's like the cloak of invisibility. But actually, although we cannot see him, everything is resting in him. As we have discussed in this, what do we talk about? Everything's resting in him? Pearls strung on a thread. Right? Maya Saramidam Proktam. Shutre Manigana Iva, as the Bhagavad Gita says. Right? You don't see the thread if the pearls are very tightly strung. But you know there is a thread by indirect evidence. As we have discussed in the seventh chapter, the entire material cosmic manifestation is only a combination of these two different energies. The superior spiritual energy, that's us, and the inferior material energy, that's this. And guess what? Because we are of a different category than the inferior material energy, there's no question of us enjoying it. We can only enjoy spirit, things that are of the same quality as us. And that spirit means other living entities and Krishna. I mean, sometimes probably to give the example is that you don't want to go and embrace a cadaver. What is a cadaver? A dead body. And of course, some people are really perverse and they may embrace dead bodies, but we are not. So you don't want to embrace a dead body, but before the person dies, you embrace them, talk to them, have a real friendly relationship, and then after that, just boom. So what are you actually in love with? What do you actually have friends with? Not with the body, you have friends with the soul. Your love is the soul within the body. So, just as the sunshine is spread all over the universe, the energy of the Lord is spread all over the creation. Everything is resting in that energy. You should not conclude that because he is spread all over, he has lost his personal existence. Of course, the Ishapanishad refutes this. He says, Om Purnam, Purnamida. So, that the Supreme Lord is perfect, he's complete. And so many perfect and complete things, such as this phenomenal world, come from Krishna. Yet he never becomes diminished. He remains the complete whole. And that's pretty amazing. Usually when we create something, we have to spend money, spend energy, and there is some loss on our own part. It's a fact. We're building a temple, we have to spend money. So it's not that the money in the bank account remains exactly the same after we've built the temple or while we're building the temple, it gets depleted. But Krishna is so amazing, he creates innumerable universes, and it's not that he's less than he was before. It's not Krishna loses anything. He creates innumerable, that means unlimited universes. And he still remains the complete whole. One minus one is one. One minus a million is one. One minus quadrillion is one. Doesn't make sense mathematically, but Krishna's above the mathematical cause and effect calculations of this world. To refute such an argument, the Lord says, I am everywhere and everything is me, but still I am aloof. So, you know, everything is in Krishna, but he's aloof. He's in the spiritual world dancing. And he has other people take care of all the management here. Those are the demigods. Krishna's not to bother with all these things. He doesn't have to bother with it. It's going to rain tonight, or it's going to be hot, or it's going to be cold. The demigods take care of that stuff. He's just enjoying Goloka Vrindavan. For example, a king has a government which is for the manifestation of the king's energy. The different governmental departments are nothing but the energies of the king, and each department is resting in the king's power. But still, one cannot expect the king to be president in every department personally. That is a crude example. Similarly, all the manifestations that we see in everything that exists, both in this material world and the spiritual world, are resting on the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's how amazing he is. It all happens by his will. Saikshita, he looks at the creation. It's all by his will. He doesn't have to do anything. Optikami just desires it to happen. As we described it in class this morning, Icha Shakti, just by his desire, the potency, something happens. The creation takes place by the diffusion of his different energies, and as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Vishtav Yam Idam Krishnam, he is everywhere present by his personal representation, the diffusion of his different energies. And also, he's in the spiritual world, he's never diminished by any of this. That's interesting, very, very interesting. Still, okay. Oh, yeah, I was going to give a story. Prabhupada's story. Once upon a time, Prabhupada was in a car and he was driving past the Ford factory in Detroit. Now with him was the great-grandson, Henry Ford, a devotee named Ambarish, Alfred Ford. And so as they were passing by the Ford factory, one of the devotees in the car with Prabhupada and Ambarish asked the question. And the question was, "Do you work here?" Asking Ambarish, not Prabhupada, obviously. And Prabhupada said, "No, he doesn't work there. He's the proprietor." So God is the proprietor. He doesn't have to work in the factory. Text 5. Now we're going to get a little more complicated philosophy here. Machamatstani bhutani paschame yogamaishvara bhuta brin nacha bhuta sto mamatma bhuta bhavanaha na never cha also matstani situated in me bhutani all creation pascha jasi me my yogamaishvaram inconceivable mystic power bhuta brit the maintainer of all living entities na never cha also Bhuta, sta, in the cosmic manifestation, mama, my, atma, self, bhuta, va, vanaha, the source of all manifestations. And so here, again, we find the achincha veda veda tattva philosophy, how Krishna is one and different from everything simultaneously and conceivably. And yet, everything that is created does not rest in me. In other words, Krishna personally is in Goloka Vrindavan. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I'm not part of this cosmic manifestation, for myself is the very source of creation. So Krishna is maintaining it by his desire, and he's everywhere by his energy. But Krishna also, personally, is in Goloka Vrindavan. He has nothing to do. He never touches Maya, never touches this material creation. Doesn't touch it. He looks at it in the form of Mahavishnu, but he doesn't touch illusion or the material creation. He has an expansion that does that, and that expansion is known as Shambhu. Shambhu is the name of Lord Shiva. So when Krishna creates the material energy, he looks at the material energy. That's Saikshita. That's in Sanskrit. He looks at it. And that look, or the glance, is personified by Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva, who is a personality himself, interacts with the pradhana, or the unmanifest stage of this material energy, and everything comes into being. So in other words, Krishna has his expansions, he has his energies, he has his devotees who take care of everything for him. But in one sense, it's all coming from him. And sometimes the example is used of a spider. The spider expands his web and then contracts it back into himself. I mean, that example is there. It's not in all respects Krishna's creation is like the spider. But the example is given in the Bhagavatam, how Krishna does that. The Lord says that everything is resting on him, matstani, sarvabhutani. In other words, everything is resting on him. That's the fourth chapter, fourth verse of this chapter. This should not be misunderstood. The Lord is not directly concerned with the maintenance and sustenance of this material manifestation. He's not directly. He's concerned, but not directly. Doesn't have to worry about it. Doesn't have to worry about it. Just like in this material world, even if you have a good manager, even if you're the boss, you have to be worried about what the manager is doing. And sometimes you have to step in and do some things. So, but Krishna never has to step in and do things, except when he wants to enjoy his pastimes in this material world. Because you can say, oh, Krishna comes, according to the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Parichanaya Satanam, Vinashaya Chaduskatam, Krishna comes to annihilate the miscreants, establish religious principles, and protect the devotees. Well, got news for you, he doesn't have to come to do those things. Because those things can be done by Krishna's energies and devotees and empowered personalities. Not that Krishna has to do anything. Krishna doesn't have to do anything. Zero. Zilch. It can all be accomplished by Krishna's empowered representatives and energies. But Krishna comes because he enjoys coming down. Although there is annihilation of miscreants, there is a upholding of religious principles, there is a protecting of devotees, as we see in the Mahabharata War. But Krishna is coming because he enjoys the different rasas. Krishna's called rasa raj. Rasa means taste of relationships. I mean, sometimes Krishna likes the pipe. Sometimes Krishna likes the joke. Sometimes Krishna likes to be a little scared. And these are indirect rasas. And that's why Krishna comes down. Otherwise, Krishna doesn't have to come down just to annihilate miscreants. I mean, that's easy stuff for Krishna's devotees. Yamaraj, Krishna's devotees, the demigods, they can do that stuff. But sometimes a miscreant appears to be so powerful that they can't do it, but that's so that his devotees will go to him and say, Krishna, this is too much for us. We need your help. And so, you know, it's to educate the devotees, help the devotees surrender, so Krishna can come down and enjoy, and also to show us that God does have activities so that we get attracted to his activities, and we ultimately lose our attraction for the hackneyed attractions of this particular material world. Sometimes we see a picture of Atlas holding the globe on his shoulders, and he seems to be very tired. Ooh, Atlas shrugged. Holding this great earthly planet. Such an image should not be entertained in connection with Krishna's upholding this creative universe. He says that although everything is resting on him, he is aloof. Yeah. They're all, what did I say before? Krishna's energies, devotees are first-class servants. They know what needs to be done without Krishna telling them. That's pretty good. Krishna doesn't have to tell them, they just know. It'd be nice to have first-class servants. And of course, second-class servants do what's supposed to be done after they're told. First-class servants do it, but they have a bad mood. And 10th-class servants don't do it at all. The planetary systems are floating in space, and this space is the energy of the Supreme Lord. But he is different from space. He is differently situated. Therefore, the Lord says, although they are situated on my inconceivable energy as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I am aloof from them. He's not there. Amazing. This is the inconceivable opulence of the Lord. He doesn't have to stick his finger in this material creation. In the Nirukti Vedic Dictionary, it is said, Yujate Nena Durga Teshu Karyeshu. The Supreme Lord is performing inconceivably wonderful pastimes displaying his energy. His person is full of different potent energies, and his determination is itself actual fact. In other words, when he wants something, it happens. Fancy way of saying that. In this way, the personality of God is to be understood. We may think of doing something, but there are so many impediments, and sometimes it is not possible to do as we like. It's like right now, I'd like to get in a plane and fly to New Zealand. Some of you from New Zealand are watching us, or Fiji. Just get in a plane, do it. But there are so many impediments. I'm not allowed to enter New Zealand or Fiji or anything right now because of this whole coronavirus thing. So we can't do everything we would like. So what am I supposed to do? Sit down here and cry? No. You make the best use of a bad bargain, or when life gives you a lemon, you make lemonade out of it. So that's us. But when Krishna wants to do something, just like we talked about today in class, Icha Shakti, simply by his willing, everything is performed so perfectly that one cannot imagine how it is being done. Now, what we mentioned in class was something very interesting. Sometimes Krishna wants to do something, and his devotees' love overrides what Krishna wants to do. In other words, prema overrides Krishna's Icha Shakti. We mentioned this in class. And we gave the example that one time, there's many examples, but one example is that one time Krishna wanted to make his wife Rukmini angry. That was his desire, his Icha Shakti. And he was thinking, how can I make her angry? Well, I'll tell her she got married to the wrong guy. She better look for someone else. And that, in essence, is what Krishna told her. And she didn't get angry because of her mood of submission, which overcame Krishna's desire. Wow, her mood of devotion overcame Krishna's desire. She fainted. And Krishna felt a little guilty. And he didn't get what he wanted. But that's a question of intimate relationships. Those are the only times when Krishna doesn't get what he wants. But actually, that's what he wants anyway. He wants his devotee to have control over him. So it's not really that he doesn't get what he wants, but apparently he doesn't get what he wants because the devotee has control over him. That's what he really loves. He wants to be controlled by the devotee, by the love of his devotee. He enjoys it like anything. The Lord explains this fact. Although he is the maintainer and sustainer of the entire material manifestation, he does not touch this material manifestation because he is of a different nature. He's not material. We don't touch this material manifestation. We're just an illusion that we're touching it. I'm not touching things with this finger. The finger, yes, is touching things, but I'm not touching things. But I am in so much illusion being connected through the material energy to this body that I think I am the body. And when the body feels pain, the body doesn't feel pain. When something happens to the body, I feel pain or pleasure. That's illusion. Simply by a supreme will, everything is created, everything is sustained, everything is maintained, and everything is annihilated. His will, Icha Shakti, that's the same thing we were talking about. He just wants it to happen. Okay. Sometimes I would like to have that sort of shakti. Okay, I will a mountain of gold. I will myself to be young. Not in another body, please. That can happen real quickly. So there's no difference between his mind and himself. That means Krishna, his mind, his desires, everything is non-different. As there is a difference between ourselves and our present material mind. That's why our mind generally is our enemy. If we can control it, you know, just whip it into shape, then it becomes our friend. But we are following it everywhere, willy-nilly. Because Krishna is absolute spirit. Whoops, I'm going on too long. Let me finish this purport. Simultaneously, the Lord is present in everything, and yet the common man cannot understand how he is also present personally. He is different from this material manifestation, yet everything is resting on him, his energy. This is explained here as Yogam Aishwaram, the mystic power of the Supreme Personality of God. And so let's take a question or two. Sorry, we went a long time. Let's take you off of Mayute so you can ask some questions. These are very important verses that illustrate the point of Achincha, Beda, Beda Tatwa. So, who has a question here? This is your opportunity, Prabhus and Pravis and Pitajis and Matajis and Rakshasas. Okay, Joe, why don't you take yourself off of mute and ask the question?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Haribo.
At the start of the class, you were talking about bad association. Here in New Zealand, we're not completely in lockdown. We're semi-normal. And one of the outcomes of COVID-19 is that a lot of people are talking about, growing things like learning from COVID-19, like growing things locally, sourcing things locally. And
Good.
so I've got some friends and neighbors who aren't devotees who want to get together to like start a communal pot, plot to like grow vegetables and kind of talk about, philosophical ideas and things like this. And they think that I would bring a unique perspective because they know, my lifestyle choices. So they want to do things, they're trying to move towards mode of goodness, but I mean, they're all, non-devotees and, I'd love to grow my own vegetables and that kind of thing. But is anybody who's not a devotee like bad association?
No, I mean, no, we can associate with people. Just be careful, that's all. Don't, I mean, don't start raising chickens for eating. But I think it's a good way to bring people to Krishna consciousness. Actually, it sounds like a very good idea. But I thought it was too cold in New Zealand to grow anything.
And we've got bad soil too, so it's hard, but we can grow some things.
Okay, you can grow some things. Maybe grow some spinach or something like
Right, okay,
that.
you just.
Joking aside, they have nice fruits in New Zealand, all sorts of nice fruits, apples and grapes and all sorts of wonderful things they grow in New Zealand season. So, yes, that sounds like a good idea. Actually, this virus is an impetus for people to become self-sufficient. One of the temples that I have some responsibility in, and as a GBC, is the temple in New Talavan. New Talavan is in a state of the United States called Mississippi. Mississippi is in the south of the United States, and it's right near New Orleans. And so what happened is when this virus started, the devotees were complaining to me that their income was very low at the farm. They have a farm there. We have about 2,000 acres of land. And the devotees were complaining that they didn't have enough money to grow any, to, let's say, buy vegetables. And I said, all right, I'm giving you an instruction. 2 months from now, you're not allowed to buy vegetables anymore. You have to grow everything. And what happens? The devotees rose to the occasion, and now they're saving thousands of dollars a month by growing everything. So it's interesting that previously they had a farm, 2,000 acres, and they weren't growing anything. The interesting thing about some ISKCON farms, not all, but especially in America, where everybody is used to the finer things in life, which we're not going to mention. I mean, it's the same thing in New Zealand. You're used to going to the grocery store to buy things and everything. So it's interesting that they rose to the occasion, and now they're growing all this nice, all these nice vegetables, and they're happy. Of course, when the coronavirus thing ends, then back to the supermarket. So necessity is the mother of invention. Actually, we should take advantage. It's actually good, Joe. You should take advantage, work with them, explain how the vegetables are meant to be offered to Krishna. And I think it could be a way that you can bring people to Krishna consciousness.
It's definitely encouraging people to think what's going on about the bigger picture, the effect that we're having, and these people are philosophically, spiritually inclined.
We're also discovering now that we have this coronavirus, we also have the, I don't know if I should say this on the internet. But there's another virus going around. It's in regard to one of our political leaders in America. And that's also waking up people. I cannot mention politics. I'm not supposed to mention politics. It's also waking up people to thinking about alternatives. It's, whenever there's a societal upheaval, due to politics or due to disease, or due to any one of a number of wars, for example, people start thinking about, alternatives. People start thinking about God. People start thinking about spirituality. Certainly, that was happening during the 1960s, which was my generation, and that's when Krishna consciousness came into, came into power, so to speak, 60s, early 70s. So that's happening now. We're actually, in America, we're having like a perfect storm. Perfect storm means there's all sorts of these factors coming together. There's the COVID virus. There's the other virus, which I mentioned, which I'm not allowed to mention. There's the Black Lives Matter thing. There's feminism. There's all these different factors coming, and people are just like examining all their paradigms and worldviews and just re-examining them and ready to change their whole outlook on life. So in these periods of these transitionary periods, it's actually they're unique opportunities for bringing people to spiritual life. So we should take advantage of it. It's a very unique, we're living in a very wonderful time where we can actually bring people to Krishna consciousness. I mean, normally in America, if you tell people this material world is miserable, they'll say, hey, you're wrong. But now, especially if they're in Hawaii, they will... We have someone here who's in Hawaii. He'll say, you are wrong, Guru Maharaj. It is beautiful here. They will think it's wrong. But actually now they're realizing every day. I mean, you look at the news and every day it's disaster. I mean, at least here in America. New Zealand's not so bad. You're doing pretty well with the COVID thing, but... And you have a very good prime minister there too.
So we've got elections coming up in September, so it's going to start getting a bit political and a bit nasty as well soon too. So,
but right now your prime minister is a really nice lady. I mean, really, probably she's probably one of the best prime ministers, if not the best prime minister on the planet. So, but in America we have the opposite. with our leadership. So it's just like, if something could go wrong, it's going wrong in America right now. And it's great. We're getting so many people flocking to the temple now. They have to take numbers, basically, when they come. People joining. It's true. Because people are waking up. It's just like the 60s again. This is an amazing time to be Krishna conscious and to be propagating Krishna consciousness. So, anyway, take advantage of it. Yes, you're growing things is a great idea. I think Pranesha has a hand up. I can see Pranesha's hand up.
Gurudev.
Yeah.
So my question is how to become the first class person so without telling to know the devotional service to serve to Krishna?
How do you become a first class devotee? Just go to your spiritual master and ask him what you should do. Who's your spiritual master? That's funny. Just ask him, just do it. You're getting married soon, right? Yes? You gotta take yourself off mute. Take yourself off mute, I can't hear you. He's too shy. Anyway, he's getting married very soon. Bless him. Bless him and his happy household life. And he has a good service attitude. He's serving me in Govardhan very nicely. He's a graduate of IIT, a very prestigious young man. So, now he's shy, he's not going to say anything. So, one other question. Anyone else have a question?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
All glories to Prabhupada.
Maharaj, when you were reciting the verses, I was a little bit pondering on Achintya Tattva Abheda Abheda Tattva.
Yeah.
So the question to me came is like the Lord is glancing this material universe. He is simultaneously one and he is not in, but he's in. That's what is my understanding. So a
he's in this material universe in terms of with his energy and also his expansion of Lord Shiva. The super soul who is in everyone's heart is not actually in the material heart. He's manifesting his presence. Prabhupada describes it's like a reflection. Let's say you have the moon reflected on different bodies of water. So in other words, you're not going to open someone's chest and see the super soul. He's transcendentally situated because the super soul cannot touch blood in the heart. You know, that's pretty gross. So Krishna never touches matter. Remember that. That's what Prabhupada said in the purport. He never comes directly in contact with matter.
Right.
Yet, he's everywhere by his energy and also by his expansion, especially Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva does touch matter. Lord Shiva does come in contact with Durga.
Maharaj, the other question that I was having in relation to this one is like within his incarnations also, is it the same to be applicable? Like when he was taking the incarnation as a Parashurama, he was more like, you know, a ferocious Brahmana who was ready to kill the kings and all.
That's nice. First of all, Parashurama is a Shaktivesh avatar. He's not Vishnu Tattva. It's a little bit different. He's a little bit different type of avatar. Secondly, I mean, apart from that subject matter, Krishna never touches matter. He comes to the material world and he appears to be here, but he's not actually in the material world. He displays his pastimes in the material world, but he's not in the material world. He never touches the illusory energy.
I'm just trying to understand this, Maharaj. So when Krishna was here, that means he was still there in Goloka Vrindavana as well?
Yes. Krishna never leaves Goloka Vrindavan. He can be in unlimited places simultaneously doing unlimitedly different things. That's Krishna. He's inconceivable. That's why we say achincha. That I cannot conceive of what that means. I can tell you what it means, but I cannot conceive of what it means. There's a little bit of difference. All right?
It's even more confusing altogether to me. I lost everything now.
I know.
The little I was holding to.
You're supposed to be confused. So it's achincha means inconceivable. Inconceivable means you can't conceive of it. Fit it within our tiny brains. But he's great. I mean, I can't even conceive of how Krishna can put a whole tree within a seed. I mean, I don't know how he does that. I mean, I've studied microbiology before, cellular biology, but I can't even conceive of how it happens. You know, I can't even conceive of what's happening in one cell. I mean, for example, I was just studying something about the DNA in the cell. You know how there's these strands, these intertwining strands, like it's called a double helix of DNA in the cell. It just turns out that sometimes these strands, they develop knots or get tangled. You ever have a wire? Here's a wire. And you just put it in your pocket. And somehow or other, you take it out the next day and there's all sorts of knots in it. And you're thinking, who the put knots in the wire? So the same thing happens to the DNA sometimes. It gets knots in it. Yet, there's this little machine inside the cell that cuts it apart and rejoins it, you know, to untangle the knots. I can't conceive of that. But it's there. And that's the material energy, which is an insignificant aspect of Krishna's creation or Krishna's manifestations. I can't even conceive of how that happens. You know, you have a little machine, little scissors that cuts, and you glue together, you know, not glue, obviously, with molecular forces. And then it puts together, it joins together the ends, the strands of the DNA, so they're actually in the same shape that they were before. There's error-checking mechanisms inside the cell. I mean, you work with computers, right?
Yes, yes, Maharaj.
You know, error checking mechanisms.
Yes.
So there's error checking mechanisms in the DNA, and what to speak when you copy the DNA to the RNA, the messenger RNA. Hope I'm not getting a little too technical for all of you. I mean, it's amazing. It's inconceivable. And that's not even like comparable to Krishna's inconceivable nature. I don't understand anything. All I know is Krishna is nice and I love him. That's all I can figure out here. And the material
maybe this,
world.
This is the point I need to carry on, Maharaj, because now it is even more further confusing to me that if Krishna was already in Goloka and he was coming in different incarnations like Lord Rama or Buddha and all, then why did he come as Krishna when he's already there in Goloka? So the Krishna whom we have seen here is not a real Krishna then?
Well, no, it's a real Krishna. Krishna comes and he manifests Goloka here on this planet for a variety of reasons. There are certain indirect rasas that are not experienced in the spiritual world. For example, there's no killing in the spiritual world. There's no ghastliness in the spiritual world. That's an indirect rasa. In the spiritual world, there's none of these baby pastimes of Krishna. In the material world, you have Krishna being born. Apparently, being born, even though he's unborn. And so there's certain pastimes that Krishna arranges just in the material world, just to enjoy in the material world. Krishna wants to fight. I mean, for example, if Krishna wants to fight someone, he arranges for his devotees to come down to the material world, like Jaya and Vijay. You know the story of Jaya and Vijay?
Yes, yes, Maharaj.
So Krishna has his own reasons. Whatever Krishna does is for his own enjoyment. That's why. The only thing I know about God is that his motivation is to have a good time. That's it. You want to do God's psychology? You know, he doesn't have any PTSD or anything like that. He's post-traumatic stress disorder. He simply wants to enjoy. He's the supreme enjoyer. That's God. That's what he's thinking. Let's enjoy. He's having a good time. And the devotees with him, they're always enjoying. And I want to be like that too. I want to always enjoy. And as far as figuring out Krishna, I never will. But I will enjoy. If you have the best friend in the world and you're having fun with him, playing some game with him, why do you want to figure out, you know, everything about him? He's fun. He's fun and he's having fun. And that's Krishna. And anyway, he's also most attractive, all those other nice things. Okay, I think we should end now. It is time. The clock strikes 7:15 in the evening. See everybody later. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Aloha.